Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we now introduce a four-month-long interactive series called Your Anecdotal Census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. As the official census takers make their rounds from now through the summer to collect those 10 question forms, we will be collecting your stories of change in our communities over the last decade. Each week from now until August, we will take your stories from another county in our area, all five boroughs, and about a dozen surrounding counties in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. We'll have guests including local historians and community leaders, plus the borough presidents and county executives, to describe the changes they have seen in the last 10 years. But the heart of this series will be your contributions on air and online. And we begin today in the epicenter of the area, New York County, a.k.a. Manhattan. So let's begin with a very basic question. If you live anywhere in Manhattan, call in right now or go to our website to tell us, how is your Manhattan community different today than it was 10 years ago? Call us, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. How is your Manhattan community different today than it was 10 years ago? And by the way, next week we'll do the same for Bergen County, and the week after that for Nassau and Suffolk. We have those pages up already on our website. If you want to begin posting stories about change in those counties. And actually, is our website back up? We were having a little bit of, or at least our comments pages were having a little bit of problem earlier. Jody, do we know? But in any case, we're beginning in Manhattan with our people's history of the last 10 years. Call us up and tell us how your Manhattan community has changed. For now, I guess on the phone only. You can define community as locally as you like, by the way. In Manhattan, that can be as locally as your building, right? Some buildings have their own zip codes. Or think about your neighborhood, from Tribeca to Inwood. How is your Manhattan community different today than it was 10 years ago? 212-433-WNYC. And since this is an anecdotal census, since this is a people's history, don't worry about trying to be a statistician or a sociologist. That's for the statisticians and sociologists to do, and we'll talk to some. Just tell us a story from your own gut, from your own eyes and ears, from your own experiences, and how they exemplify changes in your Manhattan community that are larger than you. How is your Manhattan community different today than it was 10 years ago? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And as this goes along, and all our lines are now full, so hold those calls for the moment and we'll get through some of the folks and maybe get to you too. As we go along with this series, we'll ask you, who's moving into your community and who's moving out? Is your community getting older or younger? Is it getting richer or poorer? Is it a better place to live than it was 10 years ago? Are people in your community happier or unhappier than they were 10 years ago? 212-433-WNYC, or once we get our pages back up, there again is a page for every county in our area, and it will be up through August. So think about it and then go to the page for your county and answer some of those questions in our brand new anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. And let's take our first phone call. Roy in the Sugar Hill section of Harlem. Roy, you're on WNYC. Thanks so much for calling.
Yeah, hi. I grew up in Sugar Hill, and I went back recently. I'm not living there now. I'm living in Roosevelt Island, but it was dramatically changed in terms of, for example, demographically. It used to be all black, and now it's primarily Hispanic and upper-scale white. And the prices of apartments, Bradhurst Avenue used to be called the Valley, and it was low income, and now our condos are selling there for $500,000. And the community that I live in on Roosevelt Island now, is similar changes have happened. Whereas initially it was built as a cross demographic community with a middle income and moderate income people and handicapped people. That was very important for Roosevelt Island. Now it's becoming the co-op, the older, the buildings that were for older people have now been made into co-ops, and new buildings have grown up, have been built, sponsored by New York hospitals and private interests,
right.
Where again condos and rentals are going at market rates, and so that it's become an increasingly high income community, and the middle income Mitchell Lama developments are now being shut down,
converted to market rate.
Yeah.
And Roosevelt Island is technically part of Manhattan, I believe, so
yes,
included in this segment in the series. Just so people know, if they don't really know the area, Sugar Hill is from where to where, roughly, in Harlem?
Roughly from 145th Street to 160th Street, going from Edgecombe Avenue to Amsterdam Avenue, that general area.
Do you see the changes as mixed? Or, you know, as good, bad, or mixed, I guess.
Excuse me?
Do you see the changes that you describe? Do you see them as a mixed blessing? Do you see them as overwhelmingly negative?
I see them as a mixed blessing. For one thing, they've kept the community. There are a lot of improvements happening in the community. But actually, when I was growing up, the fact that it was all black was not negative at all. It became a source of inspiration, having in your neighborhood people like Paul Robeson and Walter White and Lena Horne and Duke Ellington, and these were role models for you to aspire to. Now all of these people can live anywhere they want in the city, and you know people like Spike Lee are living in the Upper East Side, and then there's not that cohesive sense of community that was possible when it was an all-black neighborhood, an all-black aspiring neighborhood.
Roy, thank you so much for your call. It's a wonderful start to this series. Thank you very much. And listeners, as we think about Manhattan and the changes from 2000 to 2010, in case you're curious, the population of Manhattan has been growing this decade from about 1.5 million in 2000 to 1.6 million in 2008, according to the Census Bureau, so about 100,000 more people on this island, I guess including Roosevelt Island. The median income went up in those 8 years from $60,000 a year to about $68,000. I'm guessing, and maybe one of our guests will be able to tell us, but I'm guessing that $8,000 a year jump in median income in Manhattan this decade was probably the wealthiest few percent making even more money than before, trading housing derivatives and things like that. The percentage of Manhattanites who were foreign-born was 25% in 1990, 25%, 29% in 2000. It'll be interesting to see how the immigration population has grown, the immigrant population, during this decade. What new immigrants do you see in your Manhattan neighborhood if you're an old-timer or a newcomer yourself? 212-433-WNYC, if you want to be the first one to get in on Roy's line there. Your anecdotal census of people's history of the New York City area, 2000 to 2010, today on Manhattan, and let's take another call. Carol in the West Village. Carol, you're on WNYC. Thanks so much for calling.
Yes, I'm a West Villager, and there have just been really some dramatic changes. The West Village, particularly where I live on West 12th Street, used to be extremely colorful and more like a little neighborhood. And now it's become so much more elegant. Bleecker Street is like Madison Avenue with Ralph Lauren and Marc Jacobs. And I love these stores on Madison Avenue, but I really preferred having the antique shops and little artistic shops down here on Bleecker Street. We now have a bicycle lane on 8th Avenue, which is fantastic. I do bicycle. But what happens is now we only have two lanes for the traffic. So the horn blowing is really hard because the drivers get upset. And then coming across West 12th Street, all the taxis have to come from the meat market because that's become, you know, really trendy and clubby. And so now we have all the horn blowing when someone lets someone out of a taxi and the others have to wait. There is a good side. They renovated the little park across the street, which I take my cat to, which is lovely, the Abingdon Square Park, which I've dubbed Diana's Park after my late cat. And if I were, I wouldn't choose this as the colorful village that I had chosen years ago because it just isn't the way it used to be.
Do you consider leaving, or is it not that bad?
It's not bad enough for me to leave, but, you know, Brian, it never occurred to me before that I might even think of it.
Mm-hmm. Carol, thank you very much. And as I said during the series, we'll speak with local historians and community leaders. Ramona Hernandez, a historian of Dominican New York, coming up in a few minutes. With us now, John Mollenkopf, director of the Center for Urban Research at the CUNY Graduate Center. Among many other things, he is co-editor of the Urban Politics Reader, published by Routledge in 2006. John, thanks for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks. Always a pleasure.
And where would you begin to document the story of Manhattan over the last decade? If you were writing a high school review book on the topic, where might you start on the big, bold historical trends that the 2000s might be remembered for? Maybe we really heard a couple of the biggest ones from our first two callers.
Definitely. Well, I think Manhattan is the centerpiece for the long-term recovery of New York City from the catastrophic period of the mid-1970s and the fiscal crisis and the depopulation and the abandonment of housing. And all the succeeding decades have been one of growth in population, rise in income, and the recovery of the city as a whole, I think, definitely is centered on Manhattan. And it's made it a place where high-income households in the region want to be, and that's driven up property values and rents and prices over time, and gradually tending to squeeze out people with lesser incomes. There are certainly many immigrant communities like Chinatown and the Dominican community of northern Manhattan, as well as lots of public housing and Mitchell Lam and so forth that will keep people in place. But gradually, the market has had its effect on the evolution of the population.
Do you think that explains the change in median income stat that I cited? According to the Census Bureau, $60,000 median household income in Manhattan at the start of the decade, $68,000 by 2008. That's a pretty substantial jump in 8 years, and I'm guessing that's literally from the rich getting richer as Wall Street's top salaries went through the housing bubble roof. And I think from something you just said, maybe it's also poorer people or poorer middle-class people literally moving out.
Yes, and you know, the economy as a whole has tended to reward the people at the top most highly, and a lot of the nation's supply of most highly compensated people are located here in Manhattan. And so both national and local forces, I think, at least between 2000 and 2008, maybe not quite so much in the most recent downturn. There's been probably an easing of those pressures. But for the decade as a whole, we'll see serious growth in income at the top of the distribution.
You know, what I would say were the two biggest news events of the decade, probably locally and globally, both had their epicenters in Manhattan, the 9/11 attacks and the Wall Street financial bubble.
Yep.
Do you start anywhere in addition in terms of, or let me ask you a different way. We all know the human tragedy that resulted from 9/11. Are there demographic changes to Manhattan that the attack set in motion as well? For example, I used to think Manhattan would have a net population loss because of 9/11, but that doesn't seem to have happened.
Right. It's really remarkable that for those living in lower Manhattan, the couple of years after 9/11 were pretty depressing. At the beginning, there was the smell of smoke in the air and dust everywhere and construction shutoffs, and Battery Park City was having trouble retaining people and attracting people. And yet, even, you know, by 2006, 2007, that had really turned around. And you know, by now, I think, obviously, there's still a huge hole in the heart of the city down there, but it's a really remarkable demonstration of resilience.
Amy, in Union Square, or the Union Square area, you're on WNYC in our anecdotal census. Hi, Amy.
Hi, good morning.
So what change do you want to talk about?
Well, I'm an artist. I moved into this area actually over 23 years ago because of the history of artists in the area. And just the nature has become very young, very hip. The noise, unbelievable noise of Webster Hall, the billiard hall is 2-3 o'clock in the morning, people screaming, horns going off. Just a few doors down is the costume shop, which used to be Agostino Antiques. And the whole nature, the flavor has changed sometimes to the point where I'm actually scared to walk down the 4th Avenue area to get to my building.
It's interesting. And I didn't know that it was extending that far south on the east side, but mm-hmm. I think so much of the east side of Manhattan has become almost like a post-college dorm.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
a lot
NYU,
of
NYU.
Well, there's NYU itself, but yeah. And John Mollenkopf, maybe you want to weigh in on this, because I certainly hear stories like Amy's from the Upper East Side and from Murray Hill, places that were, funnily enough, as Manhattan gets ritzier and ritzier in general, mm-hmm. that were ritzy places for families to live, but that seemed to be a lot of young post-college, you know, almost dorm-like environments more than they were a decade ago, John Mollenkopf. Is that something you've tracked at all?
I haven't looked at the specific, say, 21 to 32 age group, but that is the age group that where New York City and Manhattan especially has a net inflow, whereas in other age brackets, the city tends to lose people to out-migration, suburbanization, and so on. And as Manhattan has become more attractive generally, certainly the universities, NYU, Columbia as well, and the City University have all, I think, been able to increase their enrollment and serve as magnets for youth culture in the city.
We're going to add Ramona Hernandez, a historian of Dominican New York, coming up in just a minute. And more of your stories on Episode 1 of your Anecdotal Census, A People's History of the New York City Area, 2000 to 2010. Today, this People's History of Manhattan. What has changed in your Manhattan community? Post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll take more of your phone calls, too. Stay tuned. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it's your Anecdotal Census, A People's History of the New York City Area from 2000 to 2010. Our focus today is Manhattan. Call in with any story of change from your Manhattan neighborhood over the last 10 years. And now we're going to save a few lines for anybody who happens to be Dominican and living in Manhattan or of Dominican descent. We'll talk about Washington Heights and Inwood and maybe some other parts of the city, of the borough in this case. And John Mollenkopf, director of the Center for Urban Research at the CUNY Graduate Center, is still with us. And also joining us now, Ramona Hernandez, director of the Dominican Studies Institute at City College, author of books including The Dominican Americans and The Mobility of Workers Under Advanced Capitalism. Ramona, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
And again, we're looking for some Dominican Manhattanites to call in and tell us what has changed in your neighborhood. What has changed in Washington Heights or Inwood or wherever you live? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 to add those stories to our mix. And Ramona, by way of context, I believe that since 1970, more immigrants have come to New York from the Dominican Republic than any other country. Is that a true fact?
That's correct.
And did that continue to be the case, do you think, over the last 10 years?
The Dominican migration has continued in great numbers, 1960, 1970, 1980, and, of course, 1990 in the year now. It has increased in the decade of the 1990 to the 2000, it was approximately 300,000 Dominicans came with green cards. In this decade, it's approximately 260,000 with green cards.
So just about as fast, practically
yes.
as fast.
Oh, yes.
And we've seen some reverse migration back to some countries this decade because of 9/11 in the case of some Muslim countries and because of the recession. Back to Ireland, for example, and Poland, for example. We had an Irish New Yorker guest on St. Patrick's Day who was talking about reverse migration. Now, probably fewer Irish-born people in New York today than there were 10 years ago, she said. How much has been measured? How much do you think has changed in movement two-directional between here and the DR, or not so much?
I think we are witnessing now a mobility that it's coming and going. It's not only elder Dominicans that are returning home for reasons of retirement and that kind of thing, but also the second generation, which I think is very interesting. You find Dominicans who were born and raised in this country who, for some reason, are going back home, are buying properties in the Dominican Republic, are marrying Dominicans in the island, and are returning in the format of tourism. It's a movement of two ways, or two avenues, if I may say so. People coming from home and people going from here there.
And let's take another anecdotal census call. Phalo in Washington Heights. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning. Yes. My name is Phalo. I live here in Washington Heights. And I was listening to the radio, and I decided to call in because this neighborhood has definitely changed. You have one side of the neighborhood, very young, very expensive. I see some of these buildings are being remodeled to accommodate a more upper high rent, and then you have another.
That's over in the extreme western part of the area, right? Hudson Heights along the Hudson River, et cetera, right?
Not necessarily. So you see it on 168, you see it on 190s, you see it 207, 214. It's just that a lot of people from downtown are coming up because it's very expensive to live downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have another side of this neighborhood that's becoming more poor. It's very hard for many Dominican immigrants now to find a job that pays a living wage. And it's very hard to be mm-hmm. living up here.
Do you think it's harder than it was 10 years ago, Phalo?
Absolutely. It is getting more and more. You have a lot of other poor Hispanics moving in, mostly from Mexico. And then you have a lot of people coming in which are more desperate. And the small businesses, years ago, you would see $10, $12 an hour. You do not see that anymore.
And so what are people doing to get by in these more desperate circumstances?
You have people here moving away to places like Allentown. You have people moving away to places like in the Carolinas. And you have people going back to the Dominican Republic.
Phalo, thank you so much for your call. I really, really appreciate it. And Ramona Hernandez, wow, first of all. And you wrote a book about workers' mobility.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you want to reflect on Phalo's observations?
David, he's quite right in his observation. You have a movement of Dominicans from Washington Heights to the Bronx, for instance, and also to other places. Pennsylvania, for instance, has been receiving lots of Dominicans that are coming from New York.
And he mentioned Allentown.
And when you question further, it's Manhattan. It's that area. But at the same time, the number of Dominicans in Manhattan, particularly in Washington Heights, has grown. I don't want us to think that it has declined. It's just that their increase now is not as aggressive as it used to be. It's more moderate.
Are they different Dominicans coming from the island than, of course, the island is Hispaniola, which Dominican Republic shares with Haiti, to be accurate about that. But are they different Dominicans than in 1970, 1990?
It's not it's not so much Dominicans now coming from the Dominican Republic. This is that explains in one aspect of the increase of the Dominican population here. But also you have Dominicans that are coming from other places to New York. Just as Dominicans are moving from New York to other places, you also have Dominicans coming from other areas here. And what we have noticed is that that second generation that is returning to the Dominican Republic, it's also coming back to Washington Heights and buying those apartments that fellow was mentioning that are extremely expensive, $300,000 and $500,000. This is something that we have experienced in there. Dominicans who grew up in Washington Heights went away, came back, and buying in there.
And we cited the Manhattan median income earlier, about $68,000 a year in 2008, according to the Census Bureau. Any idea what the median income might be for Dominican New Yorkers? I realize it's a very specific stat.
Definitely, but it's not that. It's half of that, the average of New York or the average of the U.S. It's approximately $30,000, $35,000.
And John Mollenkopf, before you go, with your borough-wide or city-wide view, how would you say the changes in Dominican New York we've been hearing about reflect something important about New York? Our extreme disparity of wealth, different fortunes of different immigrant groups, or anything else you might want to comment on?
Well, the Dominican community is the most recent in a long line of relatively poor groups that have moved into New York looking for economic opportunity. In the beginning, the Dominican community often worked in the garment industry, which, as we know, is a kind of declining industry, moved into small retail activities, bodegas and so forth. And gradually, the community is becoming, I can't exactly say that it's affluent yet, but it's certainly doing better bit by bit over time. And the kids are getting educated in the city university and being able to move from their parents' kind of low-skilled jobs into better jobs. But the movement for the community has been slow and not, you know, perhaps not as fast as some members of the community would like to see it be. But there's definitely a kind of suburbanization that's taken place away from Washington Heights. So the Bronx, which we used to think of as very Puerto Rican, is becoming increasingly Dominican.
And not just to the Bronx, because, in fact, I think we have Daphne, a second-generation Dominican, calling from Armonk in Westchester. Daphne, you're on WNYC. Hello. Thank you for calling our anecdotal census.
Thank you.
And did you want to tell a story of neighborhood change from Washington Heights, or what's your community change story?
Well, I just called to say I was just listening a little bit because I was on hold, so I couldn't hear the whole thing. But I just wanted to say that I think that the experience of Dominicans in New York is very varied, just like every other immigrant group experience in New York and in the United States. For example, I was born in the city and in Queens, to be exact, and then we lived for a little while in Washington Heights when I was about 2 to 3. Then we moved out to Westchester, to Yonkers, and ended up when I was 10, 11 years old, moving back to the Dominican Republic because my dad wanted to take care of his mother. And I think that's very typical, at least in my family. It was very typical, a lot of sort of moving back and forth. We ended up coming back at the insistence of all of the kids, myself and my brothers, and because we missed it here. We were Americans, and so we wanted to come back. And so we came back and finished high school here, went to college, et cetera. And I think of myself as, one of these great stories because my dad worked. He was a union worker when we were here, and he worked for 32BJ. And I ended up becoming an attorney and working as an attorney for 32BJ, which was of great pride to him. So I just think it's a very varied experience. And now, even though I live in Armonk, where there are basically no Dominicans or very few Hispanics, I end up going into the city and into Washington Heights periodically to get my hair done, to buy plátanos, to, sort of buy groceries that I just can't get around here.
And is there anything from your observations of Washington Heights as you go back and forth that says to you, wow, this is really different than 10 years ago?
Well, what I notice every time I go in, I always say this to my friends and even my family, is sort of the duality. It's so different. I'm 30 miles away in Westchester, and just, the big between, you know, out here and what life is out here and what it is over there. It's this microcosm. It has its own energy and its own culture. And yes, I've seen it change. I think that in many ways it's become more diverse. And it's very bustling, and you know, you see a lot more. I think it's more diverse, and I also think that Dominicans have become, in the last 10 years, I think that they're able to sort of, you know, sort of be Dominican and sort of you know, and have you know, their culture sort of out in the open. Whereas I think that when I was growing up, I remember sort of people being a little bit more reserved about. Sort of expressing themselves in their own culture. I don't know if you understand what I mean.
I totally understand. Daphne, thank you. Great, great story. Sure. So what a wonderful country.
I love your show. I love it. I listen to it all the time. Thank you.
Thank you for participating. Great addition to your anecdotal census. And I want to thank John Mollenkopf, Director of the Center for Urban Research at the CUNY Graduate Center. John, thank you very much.
Great to be with you. Thanks, Brian.
We'll continue in a minute with Ramona Hernandez. And we will add the Manhattan Borough President, Scott Stringer, and more of your calls with your anecdotal census as we build a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. Today, how has your Manhattan neighborhood changed? 212-433-WNYC.
WNYC support comes from Otarian, New York's new low-carbon restaurant. Information on food that's good for you and the planet is available at otarian.com. The Oratorio Society of New York, presenting Mendelssohn's Paulus, with chorus, soloists, and orchestra, conducted by Kent Tridal, Monday, May 10th, 8 p.m. at Carnegie Hall. Tickets at Carnegie Charge, 212-247-7800, or the Carnegie Hall box office.
The takeaway is, following the story of the attempted Times Square bombing, we're starting a conversation online. Are you more comfortable with more surveillance and cameras in your town or city if it helps law enforcement catch suspected terrorists? Go to thetakeaway.org and weigh in, then tune in every day to The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International. Weekday mornings on AM 820 WNYC.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we debut our new series, Your Anecdotal Census, A People's History of the New York City Area from 2000 to 2010. Today we're taking calls from anyone with a story of change in your Manhattan community over the next 10 over the last 10 years. Next week, Bergen County. 2 weeks from now, Nassau and Suffolk counties. Right now, tell us a story of how your Manhattan community has changed over the last 10 years. Our lines are full, 212-433-WNYC. Maybe we'll have time for a few more as people who are already on hold finish up. And the WNYC web team has fixed the hiccup with our comments page, so you can start adding your stories about change in Manhattan to our show page as well, to our website. Find the link that says add your stories about Manhattan here. Just go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. And also, as I said earlier, we will be doing this county by county through the summer. This is going to be every Tuesday in this 11 o'clock hour Eastern time, 1 o'clock hour if you're listening Eastern time on satellite radio. But in the 11 a.m. hour on our live broadcast, on Tuesdays we'll go county by county, and we have these pages up. So you can find your county and tell your story of change that matters in whatever community you live in at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Ramona Hernandez is still with us as we talk about Manhattan, director of the Dominican Studies Institute at City College, author of books including The Dominican Americans and the Mobility of Workers Under Advanced Capitalism, and also joining us now, the Manhattan Borough President, Scott Stringer. Borough President, welcome back to WNYC.
Nice to be on the show.
And you were elected Borough President in 2005, so you've been thinking borough-wide for at least half a decade. You represented part of Manhattan in the state assembly before that. So from where you sit, what are some of the big changes that you have seen since taking office as they affect demands on the borough president's office?
Well, I mean, what I think is interesting is the constant change that we have observed in the borough, even more than 10 years. You know, I grew up in Washington Heights, so it's very interesting to listen to callers talk about that community. When I was a young child in that community, it was a community mostly of Jewish people in Washington Heights, the Irish and Inwood, enclaves of Latinos, enclaves of African Americans. And the Jews and the Irish came from other places, settled in Washington Heights, started in jobs similar to how today the Dominican community and other people from all over the world come. And it really is the story of New York City and the story of our borough. And as borough president, it's amazing to be able to go from one end of Manhattan to the northern part and visit people from all different backgrounds. You know, what constitutes, you know, African Americans, because you have, you know, Africans and other different groups and subsets of groups, and somehow we're all living together, figuring it all out, and it is really highlighted during the census time.
And so to bring it up to the present, that was a wonderful, you know, bit of overview about historic change. Over the last 5 years, what's changing? And, you know, is it, when you talk about the diversity, is it more people of Mexican descent moving into that area to stay on Upper Manhattan for a minute? Or are there different kinds of problems and concerns expressing itself to your office from this 2005 to 2010 period? How do you measure change?
Well, what's interesting in El Barrio in East Harlem is to see a community of people from Puerto Rico, and now suddenly I believe 40% of East Harlem really in the last 10 years are now Mexican Americans. In fact, we put our first Mexican American on the local committee board. Huh. You can see who goes on committee boards, who I appoint based on population shifts.
And in fact, one of the historic stats in the last year, I believe, is that last year there were more babies born to Mexican immigrant mothers than any other immigrant group births.
Well, this is what's going to be so interesting, because what's going to happen? Mexicans are going to become part of the social change movement in the community, going to get involved in community-based organizations, become citizens, register to vote, and someday you're going to see a child who may not even be born yet serve in the state legislature or the city council, and that is the great history of our democracy reflected in our population.
Ramona Hernandez, are there Mexican, Dominican relations issues that are emerging, whether it's conflict or whether it's integration?
Actually, I think there is a good collaboration between Mexicans and Dominicans in Washington Heights. You have Mexican restaurants in Washington Heights. You have Mexicans selling flowers in Washington Heights. You have Mexicans working in Dominican restaurants and in Dominican bodegas. From the way I see it, it's more of a collaboration than a conflict, I would say.
Your anecdotal census, the people's history of New York City and vicinity, 2000 to 2010. Let's go to another neighborhood that we haven't heard from yet. Pete in Hell's Kitchen, you're on your anecdotal census. Hi, Pete.
Hi, how are you? You know, it's funny. I wanted to talk about something that's relevant to what you're talking about right now, is that there used to be a lot of garment industries in this area. In fact, right across the street, I live on 38th Street, and there used to be a lot of little garment factories. And I don't know, in the last 10 years especially, this area has kind of become an extension of Times Square's, you know, like hotels and luxury apartments. And it just totally changed the character of the area.
For the better or for the worse, as far as you're concerned?
Well, I mean, for the better, if you can afford, you know, luxury apartments. I mean, it doesn't accommodate artists or anybody who has a regular working wage. I mean, if you're making loads and loads of money, I suppose it's better for you.
Peter, thank you for your call from Hell's Kitchen.
Sure.
Another area that we haven't visited yet in Manhattan, the Lincoln Center area, from which Aaron is calling. Aaron, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Aaron. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And what change in your community do you want to talk about?
Yes, the influx of noise. The neighborhood is progressively getting dirtier and dirtier. You have food carts all over the place, leaving oil and food on the sidewalks, and the car stereos just booming, 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 and dog mess and urine all over the sidewalks. Just the smell in the air, it's just become something quite unfamiliar. I mean, it used to feel like a neighborhood you dream about, and, you know, living, but now it's just like, whoa, what is going on? And also, real quickly, I wanted to add, I think that overall New York has become, it's not quite the place it used to be for artists. There's not a lot of music industry here at a certain level, at and above a certain level. I think when we lost the Grammys because of the comments that Giuliani made that offended the Grammys board, and at one point the Grammys was coming back and forth alternating between California and Los Angeles. That was a good thing. I hear a lot of people say it's too expensive to film here. So I think it's a facade that New York is this hip place and a good place for artists, because it's really like the gentleman just said. If you're an artist, it depends on who you ask whether or not New York is what it is.
And Erin, I'm going to leave it there to get some more voice.
And it's definitely not a financially friendly place towards African Americans anymore, as most have been terminated.
Thank you very much for your call. And Borough President, how do you experience, with some of the complaints that we've heard from various callers, certainly about gentrification, about things becoming more sterile. We've heard a few people complaining about noise, either noise from the post-college crowd living on the east side now more, or just the density that Erin was just talking about in the Upper West Side. How do you experience this at the Borough President's office? Is it in the kinds of services that people apply for, the kinds of complaints they show up with? What makes your staff come to you and say, Scott, I think I see a trend developing in the borough?
These comments are very insightful. Let's start with Hell's Kitchen. Part of what we now recognize is we're worried about a diverse economy for artists, but also for garment workers. How do we have Fashion Week that we celebrate in Bryant Park, and yet we're so quick to destroy what's left of the garment center? Obviously, we're a service sector economy, but, you know, we should be able to have garment center showrooms and attract businesses and entry-level jobs. So I think in Hell's Kitchen and in the 30s, we need to fight to preserve the garment center. So we do have diversity there. Up in Harlem, South Harlem has been advertised by developers, welcome to SoHa. Central Harlem, SeHa. I mean, we already have a SoHo, and I love SoHo, and great people live there as well. But it's marketing for gentrification purposes, and we've got to figure out through land use and zoning, and this is what I've been working on for many years now, how we protect the people who moved into these communities a generation ago. They didn't have developers then or banks that wanted to invest in these community, and real people created these amazing places, and now they're being pushed out because of change, and I think that's not right.
And you're getting to the policy level. And mm-hmm. Ramona Hernandez, I think the usefulness of the census, anecdotal or otherwise, is certainly in part to help set policy priorities and determine needs. So I wonder what policy priorities you would say that the Dominican experience in New York over the last decade suggests.
In the area of employment, we need jobs that pay better salary. This is crucial for the Dominican community, for the Dominican people, and this is perhaps what's nurturing the poverty, the high poverty rates that we have. And when it comes to education, definitely more investment in education. As Professor Malankoff was saying before, Dominicans attend public institutions in great numbers. Public institution is the answer for the Dominican people. So we need more investments in public institutions rather than less. That's when it comes to public policy, definitely.
Farley, formerly from Washington Heights, with a story of positive change as he sees it. Farley, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Brian Lehrer, I want to thank you for taking my call, and I want to congratulate you for having one of our distinguished scholar and community leader, Ramona Hernandez. I just basically want to indicate that, that 10 years ago, Washington Heights was a heavily drug infect the community. And thanks to the leadership of Adriano Espaillat, Moisés, Pérez, and Ramona Hernández, they have gradually made a dramatic change for the positive in the community. And we are fortunate to have improved our community in the past 10 years. Again, my name is Farley, and I'm in Santo Domingo, and I've lived here the past 40 years. And during the past 10 years, I've noticed that transformation in our community.
Thank you very much. Anita in Morningside Heights. And Ramona's face betrays that she does not know the caller. And it was not her nephew, Farley, calling up to shout out. Anita in Morningside Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. 2 points. The most important to me is not the money one. I'll get to that afterwards. But the most important to me is that Morningside Heights isn't really Morningside Heights to me and to most people around me. Morningside Heights is Columbia University. We lived on a university, in a university neighborhood. We felt like we lived on a university campus. We were, the university dominates the cultural scene here. It is was a real cultural scene here. Since 9/11, we now feel like trespassers, unless you have an active ID card, meaning you're taking courses now this semester, you're like a trespasser in your own neighborhood, and all of that intellectual excitement, cultural excitement, everything is in many ways dissipated and closed off to us, and it's really sad.
So
it's like I've lost my home.
Columbia shutting down more to the community, in your experience, you
for
think as a result
reasons.
Of 9/11 for security
yeah.
reasons. Thank you for your call. A sad change. And Barbara in Murray Hill. We haven't had Murray Hill on yet. Hi, Barbara.
Oh, hi, Brian. I listen to your program all the time, and I love your topic. And I live at 38th Street off of 2nd Avenue, so there's always been a heavy traffic flowing into the tunnel. However, of late, the limousines, you know, with the license T, and then the number are blocking the box, and you cannot cross the street. It is seriously dangerous. And then the honking of the horns that go on, and there are big signs that say you're supposed to be fined, but of course there's no enforcement. And recently, too, the dog doo-doo is all over the place. No one's enforcing these laws, and this neighborhood has really, really changed. It has gotten very dense, and I'm very unhappy. I've lived here for 50 years, and I really would like to live elsewhere.
Borough President, that sounds like one for you.
Well, I certainly sympathize with the concerns of people calling about quality of life issues, sanitation, a more livable community. Part of what I did when I became borough president was we actually surveyed block-the-box issues and found that there were some 1,000 block-the-box cases in a matter of hours, and that report led to changing a law in Albany that cracked down on that issue. Obviously, you don't eradicate it totally, but there has to be a feeling in a borough like ours, which brings in so much traffic because it really is such a center of the economy, that we have to remind ourselves that while we want business to flow here, there are a bunch of little neighborhoods in Manhattan, Murray Hill, Washington Heights, the Village. I mean, you talk about university expansion. Here's the political dilemma. You need our universities to expand and modernize because we want to attract people from around the world to go here. That's our intellectual capital.
And such a part of our economic growth, too, these days.
Absolutely. But when you look at, you know, we have great universities, City University of New York, NYU, Columbia University, Fordham University. So they have to expand, but they can't overrun communities. And that is the political challenge. We've got to have them coexist so that people don't feel that they live on a campus. They live in a neighborhood that does allow for intellectual growth, and that is the best. That is the biggest challenge we have in Manhattan, and that is something that is high stakes for the future economic growth of our city.
Let me sneak one more anecdotal census story in here. We've got a minute for Sean in Marble Hill, and Marble Hill, some people would say, is in the Bronx, over the water there, near the Target.
No, and I went to Kennedy High School right there, so it's Manhattan.
It's practically Riverdale. Sean in Marble Hill, hi, we've got 30 seconds for you. What's your story of change over the last 10 years?
My story of change, fourth generation Manhattanite, is the culture of complaint. We used to be a city growing up here. I'm in my 50s. And where people would let the food truck make his living, where you abided by things and you didn't expect government to take care of every quality of life complaint that you could think of.
And, Sean, I have to leave it there because we are flat out of time, but thank you for calling from Marble Hill. We've gotten so many Manhattan neighborhoods represented. Borough President Scott Stringer, thank you. Ramona Hernandez from City College, thank you. And that concludes part one of our brand new series, Your Anecdotal Census, A People's History of the New York Area 2000 to 2010. Our focus this week has been Manhattan. We will now go county by county in our region for about the next 4 months. Next week, Bergen County. 2 weeks from now, we'll combine Nassau and Suffolk. You can see the whole schedule on our website, and you can add your stories of change in your community in advance anytime for any county that we'll be talking about, which means any county in our region. Those pages are ready to receive them at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. One program note, Attorney General Eric Holder will provide an update on the Times Square attempted bombing at 1 o'clock this afternoon. WNYC will carry it live online. And, of course, the WNYC news team continues to monitor the story, listen for updates throughout the day, and, again, hear the full Holder remarks on our website at 1 o'clock this afternoon, WNYC.org. Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, Paige Cowett, Alan Smith and Eileen Markey produced today's program. Our 10 Questions That Count Census Project editor is Valerie Lipinski, and our senior producer is Megan Ryan. That's Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. I'm Brian Lehrer.